Chapter 21, A New Departure in Flavourings. Dear me, there is nothing but meetings and partings in this world, as Mrs. Lynde says, remarked Anne plaintively, putting her slate and books down on the kitchen table on the last day of June and wiping her red eyes with a very damp handkerchief. Wasn't it fortunate, Marilla, that I took an extra handkerchief to school today? I had a presentiment that it would be needed. I'd never thought you were so fond of Mr. Phillips that you'd require two handkerchiefs to dry your eyes just because he was going away, said Marilla. I don't think I was crying because I was really so very fond of him, reflected Anne. I just cried because all the others did. It was Ruby Gillis that started it. Ruby Gillis has always declared she hated Mr. Phillips, but just as soon as he got up to make his farewell speech, she burst into tears. Then all the girls began to cry, one after the other. I tried to hold out, Marilla. I tried to remember the time Mr. Phillips made me sit with the boy, and the time he spelled my name without an E on the blackboard, and how he said I was the worst dunce he had ever met at geometry and laughed at my spellings, and all the times he had been so horrid and sarcastic. But somehow, I couldn't, Marilla. I just had to cry too. Jane Andrews has been talking for a month about how glad she'd be when Mr. Phillips went away, and she declared she'd never shed a tear. Well, she was worse than any of us, and had to borrow a handkerchief from her brother. Of course, the boys didn't cry, because she hadn't brought one of her own, not expecting to need it. Oh, Marilla, it was heart-rending. Mr. Phillips made such a beautiful farewell speech beginning, "The time has come for us to part." It was very affecting, and he had tears in his eyes too, Marilla. Oh, I felt dreadfully sorry and remorseful for all the times I'd talked in school and drawn pictures of him on my slate, made fun of him and Prissy. I can tell you I wished I'd been a model pupil like Minnie Andrews. She hadn't anything on her conscience. The girls cried all the way home from school. Carrie Sloane kept saying every few minutes, "The time has come for us to part." And that would start us off again, whenever we were in any danger of cheering up. I do feel dreadfully sad, Marilla, but one can't feel quite in the depths of despair with 2 months' vacation before them, can they, Marilla? And besides, we met the new minister and his wife coming from the station. For all I was feeling so bad about Mr. Phillips going away, I couldn't help taking a little interest in the new minister, could I? His wife is very pretty. Not exactly regally lovely, of course. It wouldn't do, I suppose, for a minister to have a regally lovely wife, because it might set a bad example. Mrs. Lynde says the minister's wife over at Newbridge set a very bad example because she dresses so fashionably. Our new minister's wife was dressed in blue muslin with lovely puffed sleeves and a hat trimmed with roses. Jane Andrews said she thought puffed sleeves were too worldly for a minister's wife. But I didn't make any such uncharitable remark, Marilla, because I know what it is to long for puffed sleeves. Besides, she's only been a minister's wife for a little while, so one should make allowances, shouldn't they? They are going to board with Mrs. Lynde until the man's is ready. If Marilla, in going down to Mrs. Lynde's that evening, was actuated by any motive save her avowed one of returning the quilting frame she had borrowed the preceding winter, it was an amiable weakness shared by most of the Avonlea people. Many a thing Mrs. Lynde had lent, sometimes never expecting to see again, came home that night in charge of the borrowers thereof. A new minister, and moreover a minister with a wife, was a lawful object of curiosity in a quiet little country settlement, where sensations were few and far between. Old Mr. Bentley, the minister whom Anne had found lacking in imagination, had been pastor of Avonlea for 18 years. He was a widower when he came, and a widower he remained, despite the fact that gossip regularly married him to this, that, or the other every year of his sojourn. In the preceding February, he had resigned his charge and departed amid the regrets of his people, most of whom had the affectation born of long intercourse for their good old minister in spite of his shortcomings as an orator. Since then, the Avonlea church had enjoyed a variety of religious dissipation in listening to the many and various candidates and supplies who came Sunday after Sunday to preach on trial. These stood or fell by the judgment of the fathers and mothers in Israel, but a certain small, red-headed girl who sat meekly in the corner of the old Cuthbert pew also had her opinions about them, and discussed the same in full with Matthew, Marilla always declining from principle to criticise ministers in any shape or form. "I don't think Mr. Smith would have done, Matthew," was Anne's final summing up. "Mrs. Lynde says his delivery was so poor, but I think his worst fault was just like Mr. Bentley's. He had no imagination, and Mr. Terry had too much. He let it run away with him, just as I did mine in the matter of the haunted wood. Besides, Mrs. Lynde said his theology wasn't sound. Mr. Gresham was a very good man and a very religious man, but he told too many funny stories and made the people laugh in church. He was undignified, and you must have some dignity about a minister, mustn't you, Matthew? I thought Mr. Marshall was decidedly attractive, but Mrs. Lynde said he isn't married or even engaged because she made special inquiries about him, and she said it would never do to have a young, unmarried minister in Avonlea because he might marry in the congregation, and that would make trouble. Mrs. Lynde is a very far-seeing woman, isn't she, Matthew? I am very glad they've called Mr. Allen. I liked him because his sermon was interesting and he prayed as if he meant it, not just as if he did it because he was in the habit of it. Mrs. Lynde said he isn't perfect, but she says she supposes we couldn't expect a perfect minister for $750 a year. And anyhow, his theology is sound because she questioned him thoroughly on all points of the doctrine. And she knows his wife's people. And they are most respectable, and the women are all good housekeepers. Mrs. Lynde says that sound doctrine in the man and good housekeeping in the woman make an ideal combination for a minister's family. The new minister and his wife were a young, pleasant-faced couple, still in their honeymoon and full in all good and beautiful enthusiasm for their chosen life work. Avonlea opened its heart to them from the start. Old and young, like the frank, cheerful young man with his high ideals, and the bright, gentle little lady who assumed the mistressship of the manse. With Mrs. Allen, Anne fell promptly and wholeheartedly in love. She had discovered another kindred spirit. "Mrs. Allen is perfectly lovely," she announced one Sunday afternoon. "She's taken our class and she's a splendid teacher." She said right away she didn't think it was fair for the teacher to ask all the questions. "And you know, Marilla, that is exactly what I've always thought. She said we could ask her any questions we liked, and I asked ever so many. I'm good at asking questions, Marilla." "I believe you," was Marilla's emphatic comment. "Nobody else asked as any except Ruby Gillis, and she asked if there was to be a Sunday school picnic this summer. I didn't think that was a very proper question to ask because it hadn't any connection with the lesson. The lesson was about Daniel and the lion's den. But Mrs. Allen just smiled and said she thought there would be. Mrs. Allen has a lovely smile. She has such exquisite dimples in her cheeks. I wish I had dimples in my cheeks, Marilla. I'm not half so skinny as I was when I came here, but I have no dimples yet. If I had, perhaps I couldn't influence people for good. Mrs. Allen said we ought to always try to influence other people for good. She talked so nice about everything. I never knew before that religion was such a cheerful thing. I always thought it was kind of melancholy, but Mrs. Allen isn't, and I'd like to be a Christian if I could be one like her. I wouldn't want to be one like Mr. Superintendent Bell." "It's very naughty of you to speak so about Mr. Bell," said Marilla severely. "Mr. Bell is a real good man." "Oh, of course he's good," agreed Anne, "but he doesn't seem to get any comfort out of it. If I could be good, I'd dance and sing all day because I was glad of it. I suppose Mrs. Allen is too old to dance and sing, And of course it wouldn't be dignified in a minister's wife, but I can just feel she's glad she's a Christian and that she'd be one even if she could get into heaven without it. I suppose we must have Mr. and Mrs. Allen up to tea some day soon, said Marilla reflectively. They've been most everywhere but here. Let me see. Next Wednesday would be a good time to have them. But don't say a word to Matthew about it, for if he knew they were coming, he'd find some excuse to be away that day. He's got so used to Mr. Bentley, he wouldn't mind him. But he's going to find it hard to get acquainted with a new minister, and a new minister's wife will frighten him to death. I'll be as secret as the dead, assured Anne. But oh, Marilla, will you let me make a cake for the occasion? I'd love to do something for Mrs. Allen, and you know I can make a pretty good cake by this time. You can make a layer cake, promised Marilla. Monday and Tuesday, great preparations went on at Green Gables. Having the minister and his wife to tea was a serious and important undertaking, and Marilla was determined not to be eclipsed by any of the Avonlea housekeepers. Anne was wild with excitement and delight. She talked it all over with Diana on Tuesday night in the twilight as they sat on the big red stones by the dryad's bubble and made rainbows in the water with little twigs dipped in fir balsam. Everything is ready, Diana, except my cake, which I'm going to make in the morning, and the baking powder biscuits which Marilla will make just before tea time. I assure you, Diana, that Marilla and I have had a busy 2 days of it. It's such a responsibility having a minister's family to tea. I never went through such an experience before. You should just see our pantry. It's a sight to behold. We're going to have jelly chicken and cold tongue. We're to have 2 kinds of jelly, red and yellow, and whipped cream, and lemon pie, and cherry pie, and 3 kinds of cookies, and fruitcake, and Marilla's famous yellow plum preserves that she keeps especially for ministers, and pound cake, and layer cake, and biscuits, as aforesaid, and new bread and old both, in case the minister is deceptic and can't eat new. Mrs. Lynn said ministers are mostly deceptic, but I don't think Mr. Allen has been a minister long enough for it to have had a bad effect on him. I just grow cold when I think of my layer cake. Oh, Diana, what if it shouldn't be good? I dreamed last night that I was chased all round by a fearful goblin with a layer cake for a head. It'll be good, all right, assured Diana, who is a very comfortable sort of friend. I'm sure that piece of the one you made we had for our lunch in Idlewild 2 weeks ago was perfectly elegant. Yes, but cakes have such a terrible habit of turning out bad just when you especially want them to be good, sighed Anne, setting a particularly well-balsamed twig afloat. However, I suppose I shall just have to trust to Providence and be careful to put in the flour. Oh, look, Diana, what a lovely rainbow! Do you suppose the dryad will come out after we go away and take it for a scarf? You know there is no such thing as a dryad, said Diana. Diana's mother had found out about the haunted wood and been decidedly angry over it. As a result, Diana had abstained from any further imitative flights of imagination and did not think it prudent to cultivate a spirit of belief even in a harmless dryad. But it's so easy to imagine there is, said Anne. Every night before I go to bed, I look out of my window and wonder if the dryad is really sitting here, combing her locks with the spring for a mirror. Sometimes I look for her footprints in the dew in the morning. Oh, Diana, don't give up your faith in the dryad. Wednesday morning came. Anne got up at sunrise because she was too excited to sleep. She had caught a severe cold in the head by reason of her dabbling in the spring on the preceding evening, but nothing short of absolute pneumonia could have quenched her interest in culinary matters that morning. After breakfast, she proceeded to make her cake. When she finally shut the oven door upon it, she drew a long breath.